tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting. Rebel officials and emergency personnel say two people were killed today in the rebel-held Ukrainian city of Donetsk when a shell hit a bus station. Military officials say rebel attacks near Debaltseve have killed at least 19 soldiers and wounded 78. The leaders of Ukraine, Russia, France, and Germany are holding a summit today to try to resolve the conflict. Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko said his government and the European Union would speak with one voice. He earlier described the four-nation summit as one of the last chances to end the fighting between his country's forces and pro-Russian separatists. He also said he would not hesitate to introduce martial law throughout the country if the conflict escalates. The United States, Britain, and France announced the closure of their embassies in Yemen due to deteriorating security conditions in that country. The U.S., Britain, and France all advised citizens not to travel to Yemen and for those already in the country to leave. The Chadian military says its troops repelled an attack by Boko Haram militants in a Nigerian border town today. Military sources say Boko Haram attacked Chadian positions in Gambaru. They say Chadian forces knew the attack was coming and were prepared. Reuters news agency quotes a source as saying 8 Chadian soldiers were wounded. Police say Australian authorities have thwarted a terrorist attack. They arrested 2 men and seized a knife, a machete, and a homemade flag associated with the Islamic State group. Omar al-Kutubi and Mohammed Kiad were taken into custody during a Tuesday raid in a suburb of Sydney, Australia. This is VOA News. A court in Belgium today declared an Islamist group a terrorist organization and sentenced its leader to prison. The court in Antwerp has handed down the 12-year sentence for Fouad Abelkacem. He's the head of Sharia for Belgium after a trial that began in October. U.S. President Barack Obama has paid tribute to American aid worker Kayla Mueller. She was killed while helping being held by Islamic State militants in Syria. Officials and family members confirmed Mueller's death on Tuesday. The United Nations Refugee Agency says at least 300 migrants are missing and likely dead after trying to cross the Mediterranean Sea in inflatable boats. The UN High Commissioner for Refugees said today he is shocked by new information that shows the scale of the tragedy is much larger than initially reported. A UNHCR spokesman, Lauren Jollet, criticized the new EU-backed rescue patrol called Operation Triton as being ineffective.
It's not a rescue operation. It's not an operation that was conceived as a rescue operation. It's mainly looking at border control. So, in fact, after the end of Mare Nostrum, which was put in place by the Italians for nearly a year, nothing has taken its place.
Italian authorities said migrants died of hypothermia trying to cross the sea from Libya in cold weather. The Turkish government is facing criticism over proposed new security legislation. Turkish opposition parties, as well as the European Union, are asking the government to reconsider the tough measures. Dorian Jones has more.
One of the most controversial aspects of the legislation allows police to detain people without trial and search homes without court orders. The new measure also says those who cover their faces fully or partially during protests could be sent to prison for up to 5 years. Additionally, police officers will be authorized to use lethal force against individuals who attack schools, public buildings, and worship areas with Molotov cocktails, explosives, or any other weapons. The reforms were drafted in the aftermath of October's nationwide protest by Turkey's Kurdish minority. Dorian Jones, Istanbul.
Greece is headed for a showdown today with its European creditors over terms of austerity measures imposed in order to have Greece receive economic bailouts. Greece's finance minister, Yanis Varoufakis, is meeting with Eurozone finance ministers in Brussels. American TV presenter Brian Jones has been suspended for 6 months without pay, the penalty for misrepresenting his role in an Iraq war story. On Wall Street, U.S. stock indexes opened mixed today. I'm Dave DeForest in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Human Rights Watch says in a new report that Sudanese army soldiers raped more than 200 women and girls in a planned attack in Darfur late last year. Analysts say violence in war-torn Darfur is escalating and the international community needs to renew efforts to end the conflict.
That's Sela Hennessy reporting from London. Details next. Also in the news, a military spokesman says Chadian forces in the Nigerian town of Gambaru killed 13 Boko Haram fighters today when they attempted to take the town. We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story this hour, Human Rights Watch says in a new report that Sudanese army soldiers raped more than 200 women and girls in a planned attack in North Darfur late last year. Analysts say violence in Darfur is escalating and the international community needs to renew efforts to end the conflict. Sela Hennessy reports from London.
Jonathan Loeb from Human Rights Watch authored the report. He says the attack by the Sudanese army was carried out on October 30th of last year. He says the HRW investigation found that at least 221 women and girls were raped in the North Darfur town of Tabit in an attack that lasted 36 hours.
And these included looting of property, beating of men and women, and the mass rape of dozens, if not hundreds, of women and young girls.
Allegations of the attack first emerged in early November with a report by Radio Dabenga, a Netherlands-based station. Sudan denied the report. The African Union United Nations Mission in Darfur, or UNAMID, was initially restricted from entering the town, but was allowed brief access to Tabit on November 9th. It said none of those interviewed had confirmed any incident of rape took place in Tabit. However, the UN envoy on sexual violence, Zainab Hawa Bengura, later said that heavy military presence during the UN's visit raised concerns that a wall of silence had been created. Loeb says the UN now needs to provide protection to the civilians who are still living in fear. He says the UN mission, which is stationed about 50 kilometers outside of the town, should establish a permanent operating base inside Tabit.
The women and the civilians in this village, some have fled to internally displaced person camps and to neighboring villages, but most of them are still there in their homes and they don't have anywhere to go and they are still completely vulnerable. There is a constant military presence in this town. And the civilians have no defense against that.
Jeremy Taylor is an expert on Darfur at the University of London. He says the attack, which Sudan has denied, could be a result of weak command and control. Some armed groups, he says, might operate on their own initiatives. But historically, he says, there has been evidence of similar attacks directed by the Sudanese government.
Generally speaking, the history of Darfur and certainly the evidence secured by the International Criminal Court, for example, is clear that these kinds of atrocities are recognized and most likely ordered by high-level political and intelligence figures in Khartoum.
The International Criminal Court has charged President Omar al-Bashir with war crimes and genocide for allegedly masterminding large-scale attacks on Darfur civilians. In January, the United Nations Panel of Experts on Sudan reported that over 3,000 villages were burned in Darfur last year, predominantly in government-led attacks. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs reported that almost 500,000 Darfur residents were displaced by attacks in 2014. And another 70,000 in the first 3 weeks of 2015. Jeremy Taylor.
In terms of the bigger picture, it's part of a long-term problem and a culture of violation that has been going on for years now, for over a decade.
For this report, Human Rights Watch spoke to residents and former residents of Tabit by telephone due to access restrictions. Sela Hennessy for VOA News, London.
A military spokesman says Chadian forces in the Nigerian town of Gambaru killed 13 Boko Haram fighters today when they attempted to take the town. The Chadian troops are part of a regional offensive trying to halt further advances by Boko Haram. The group has seized large parts of three states in northern Nigeria. Residents also reported hearing rocket fire in the nearby town of Ngugimi. And on the political front, the battle for Nigeria's presidency has spread to the courts. At least seven cases have been filed since late 2014 to try to disqualify the two top candidates. The Federal High Court began looking at the cases this week, just days after Nigeria postponed the February 14 poll to March 28. VOA's Anne Look has more from Abuja.
Campaigning has simmered down in Nigeria for now, as another six-week stretch was added to the race. Attention has turned to the federal courts, where cases have been filed challenging the eligibility of President Goodluck Jonathan and his challenger Muhammadu Buhari to run for the country's top office. Political parties can file post-election disputes. The law reserves the pre-electoral period for private citizens. It's not unusual to see hundreds of cases filed. But these challenges are something new. Legal analyst and senior advocate of Nigeria, attorney Hassan Lehman, says most pre-election cases are filed by people upset with the choices of their own political parties.
But what we are having now is beyond the intra-party conflict.
Nigeria's constitution dates to 1999. At question for Mr. Jonathan is whether winning this election could put him over the constitutional two-term limit. Mr. Jonathan was vice president in 2010 when President Umaru Yar'Adua died. Mr. Jonathan served out a year of his predecessor's mandate before being elected president in 2011. Individuals behind two suits against Mr. Jonathan tell VOA the courts must decide if the Constitution allows a president to stay in office for a total of 9 years. Lehman says the suits against both Jonathan and Buhari raise questions of legal merit.
When you start to implement and apply certain provisions of the Constitution, then you are confronted with certain practical things. Then you need the courts to give a proper interpretation.
The Federal High Court has referred one of the Jonathan cases to the Court of Appeals for interpretation. The move fast-tracks the case. The Federal High Court struck down another suit Wednesday and ordered damages paid to the president, according to local media. Three suits and a criminal complaint for fraud are seeking to disqualify Mr. Buhari on the basis of a missing high school certificate, one of four constitutional requirements to run for president. Buhari's lawyers are challenging the mode of service and the competence of the main suit, which is now adjourned until February 23rd. Lehman says the case could drag on.
The onus of proof is on those that are accusing him. If they call evidence, he too will have to call evidence.
Mr. Buhari has run for president in the three previous elections. This is the first time his educational credentials are being formally challenged. The cases against both candidates point to the high stakes of this election and the risks that some say were intensified by the delay.
Anything could happen in 6 weeks.
Executive Director of the Policy and Legal Advocacy Center in Abuja, Clement Nwankwo, is worried about an unraveling of the process.
There will be interruptions from what we see. Certainly, there are people who do not want elections to happen and who are up to all sorts of shenanigans ahead of Scotland, the elections happening. We've seen cases filed in the courts, all of it aimed at creating a hiccup in the electoral calendar set up by the Electoral Commission. And this worries us.
Rulings on these cases could inflame tensions. They could disqualify one or both of the candidates before or even in theory after the vote happens, since a pre-election case has no time limit, according to Lehman. It's a key test for Nigeria's judiciary. Is it independent? And will its judgments be perceived that way? Anne Look, VOA News, Abuja.
You are listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. 15 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Human Rights Watch says in a new report that Sudanese army soldiers raped more than 200 women and girls in a planned attack in North Darfur late last year. And military spokesman says Chad forces in the Nigerian town of Gambaru killed 13 Boko Haram fighters today when they attempted to take the town. We'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at African News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237. President Barack Obama is expected to announce plans today to withdraw an estimated 1,200 U.S. troops from West Africa. They were sent to the region as part of a U.S. effort to fight Ebola. Most are to return to the U.S. in the next 2 months. Some 1,500 troops have already returned to the U.S. They helped build 15 Ebola treatment units and trained more than 1,500 health workers. Since March of last year, an estimated 23,000 people have been infected with the Ebola virus and more than 9,000 have died. The International Federation of Red Cross and Red Crescent Societies reports continued community resistance to the arrival of health workers in parts of Guinea. The organization says residents in the town of Lola have set up roadblocks to prevent the entry of health workers and threw rocks at their vehicles. South African President Jacob Zuma addresses Parliament tomorrow, and there's a chance his speech could be disrupted by protesters. Scandal has hung over Mr. Zuma for nearly 6 years after local journalists reported he allegedly spent public funds to upgrade his rural homestead in Kandala. The renovations are estimated to have cost about $20 million. The nation's newest opposition force, the Economic Freedom Fighters Party, has promised to disrupt Mr. Zuma's address. The group has called on the president to pay back the money. Party head Julius Malema has threatened to show up at the speech naked as a form of protest. Reporter Pitso Molimani of VOA's affiliate station Kaya FM is covering the opening of Parliament in Cape Town. He spoke with VOA's Kim Lewis about what the South Africans want the president to address.
I can tell you that the president is not much concerned. On Sunday, he met with the editors and the journalists in South Africa. And when we posed that question to him, the president said that he relied on the arrangement and the preparations under the security cluster, the Speaker of Parliament. They have to take the responsibility and make sure that no disruptions will take place in Parliament as he addresses or he delivers the 7th State of the Nation address, which is obviously tomorrow.
What types of security measures is Parliament taking to prepare for possible disruptions?
Parliament has not outlined as to what measures will be in place, but what Parliament has been saying that is that it's going to rely on all of the security measures that are responsible for Parliament. And there have been calls from the religious organization, the religious groups, the ministries, the pastors in the country. There's also been calls from opposition parties, of which some of the opposition parties have distanced themselves from joining the EFF in its planned threat or its plan to disrupt the parliament procedures tomorrow night.
What does the EFF hope to accomplish if they should follow through with their threat to disrupt parliament tomorrow?
The accomplishment that the EFF is expecting is based on what they have been saying, even if before they win the seat to be in parliament. Quickly, the EFF has been saying that they want to make sure that the South African parliament is in order. They've been saying that they want to see South African parliament working. They don't want to see the ministers sleeping in parliament. They don't want to see the ministers, even the president, not answering important questions in parliament. Now, the EFF believe that if the president can answer the questions that have been asked to him, then there's not going to be any disturbance or disruption of parliament. But again, remember, EFF is a new political party. They want to score points politically in all the corners that are available to them. So one of the important reasons is that we are approaching the 2016 local government elections in next year, which is in the year 2016. Now, the EFF wants to make a point. They want to be heard. They want to be seen. They want to be acknowledged and recognized as the main opposition party.
What are some of the top issues that they feel that South Africa is not accomplishing?
One of the important things is nationalization. They've been making noise about nationalization. They want all the private companies to be nationalized, the private companies, but state-owned companies to be nationalized, like, for example, Eskom, South African Airways, and most of them. They want those entities to be nationalized. Also, what's important, they also want the mines to be nationalized. They believe that the mines are not doing what they are due to do, which is to create employment for people in South Africa. They believe that residents around the areas where the mines are mining should benefit from the mine. Very importantly, another thing is poverty. They want government to make sure that it eradicates poverty. You might be aware that in South Africa, there are too many informal settlements. There's a high level of unemployment in South Africa. So EFF believes that South Africa is capable, South Africa is rich, and South Africa can make sure that it takes care of its own people or residents.
Do the people of South Africa feel the same, that these issues that the EFF is laying out, these are the issues that they want addressed as well?
Absolutely. Those are the issues that have been subsumed. Because you cannot run away from the issues of high level of unemployment. You cannot run the issues of poverty. You cannot run the issues of challenge of health. You cannot run for the issues of challenge of education. So the EFF is capitalizing on what might be seen as the loopholes. So many politicians, even those that are currently in power and from the oppositions, they've never spoken easy. They've never spoken direct as far as EFF has been speaking. So EFF has seen a gap in the market, and they capitalize on that, and they're talking in the simplest language and issues that people want to hear on a daily basis.
That was reporter Petso Molimani of VOA affiliate Kaya FM. He spoke with Kim Lewis from South Africa's parliament in Cape Town. The 16th World Conference on Tobacco or Health will be held next month in Abu Dhabi. The five-day meeting will feature the latest in smoking control efforts. The World Health Organization estimates tobacco kills nearly 6 million people every year, mostly in low- and middle-income countries. VOA's Jody Kapawa reports.
The conference theme is Tobacco and Non-Communicable Diseases, or NCDs. They include cancer, stroke, cardiovascular and lung disease, and diabetes. While tobacco kills 6 million a year, the WHO says NCDs take the lives of 16 million people annually before they reach age 70. It's the first time the conference, which is held every 3 years, will focus on NCDs. Dr. Essan Latif is director of the Tobacco Control Department for the International Union Against Tuberculosis and Lung Disease, more commonly known as the Union.
Tobacco use and cigarette and smoking is one of the main factors in causing all the NCDs.
He says non-communicable diseases will increase as smoking increases.
They will, given the current use of tobacco and smoking, which is increasing mostly in the developing countries, we can predict an increase in the NCDs over the coming years if nothing is done.
But with all that is known about the health risks of tobacco, why is smoking on the rise in low- and middle-income countries?
It's just a lack of legislation and awareness of the people. The governments recognize that something needs to be done, but their efforts are undermined by the presence of a very strong tobacco industry. These tobacco industries are bigger than the economies of some of the countries that we work in, and their pressure and false impression given to the governments of the economic contribution they have just paralyzes some of these governments of introducing good tobacco control efforts.
Tobacco companies have claimed in the past that governments can boost revenues by taxing cigarette sales. Critics say any financial benefits are far outweighed by the burden on health care. Dr. Latif says smoking is on the rise, especially in one particular age group.
It's particularly the young and the young adults where the incidence keeps increasing, because as you grow old, you become more aware of what the environment is, whether it's good and bad for you. But young people under different influences like peer pressure, stress, false sense of safety.
And he says cigarette advertising is aimed at the young.
You don't see a tobacco industry sponsoring an event for 60-year-olds. They always sponsor it for young adults. So you have concerts, you have got rallies, you've got things which attract the young people, and those are the ones sponsored by the industry to increase their sales in this age group.
Dr. Lateef says the rise in smoking in developing countries coincides with the adoption of the Western-style diet, which is laden with sugar, salt, and fat.
As you modify your behaviors, as you look at these fast food chains opening up in low and middle income countries, and as some of the economies in transition, these things become more affordable, in the low and middle income countries, it's seen as a fashion, as a fad. If you want to look trendy, you need to go to a fast food chain, which is popular in the West as well.
The World Conference on Tobacco or Health is being held in the United Arab Emirates to raise awareness in the region. So the conference will consider the use of shisha or water pipes.
We see shisha and water pipe as a gateway to smoking. So the impression given by the shisha makers is that it does not contain any tobacco, or it does not have those kind of health hazards as direct smoking would have. But that we know is entirely false. It has the same hazards as if you smoke a cigarette. It's the same as if you smoke a low tar cigarette or a high tar content cigarette. The effects are the same. They all kill you.
There's also concern about e-cigarettes or electronic cigarettes. They are marketed as a safer alternative, but health officials are concerned about potential addiction and have not called them safe. Lateef says reducing non-communicable diseases will require efforts on multiple fronts.
When we look at the NCDs and the causes of NCDs, we are also talking about the alcohol industry, the food industry. So we will be going up against not only the tobacco industry, but also other powerful industries as well. And that's not going to be easy. So we need all the support and the resources we can get.
The 16th World Conference on Tobacco or Health will be held in Abu Dhabi from March 17th through the 21st. Joe DiCapua, VOA News, Washington.
The UN Refugee Agency says Sunday's boat tragedy on the Mediterranean Sea was much worse than originally thought. Initial reports said 29 migrants and refugees who sailed from Libya had died from hypothermia. They had tried to reach Europe in rubber dinghies or very small boats. About 110 survivors in other boats were brought to the Italian island of Lampedusa after being rescued. Today, however, the UNHCR says as many as 300 people that were aboard the dinghies are missing. Most of those missing and rescued are from sub-Saharan Africa. Nearly 220,000 people, including migrants and refugees, crossed the Mediterranean last year. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. On behalf of our African News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Calvin Fowler, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butter here to remind you that February is Black History Month in the United States. And starting February 2nd, we'll begin our Black History Month series and daily quiz on Daybreak Africa. Listen every morning as we profile historical African-American and African individuals and events. You can win special VOA goodies by answering one of our daily Black History questions. Please send your answers to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. You can also call us on 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your answer. We will select a winner each morning from among the correct answers.